back, folks, fans and friends, to season 14, episode 2 of Mention and Dispatches. And in keeping with tradition, our co-host shows up for the second episode. Mike, welcome back. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. I mean, yeah, the studio is in disarray. It's undergoing renovations. And then on top of that, the computer has decided to blue screen a death me every time I use it. So that's where we are.
StreamYard right. works surprisingly well on a phone, by the way.
What's that?
Yes.
StreamYard works surprisingly well on a phone.
Yeah, if I get that desperate, maybe I'll have to try that.
I have gone live with StreamYard from Noble Knight Games, actually. I went live with StreamYard from on the phone from Origins a couple of times, and then also from the Fall Assembly. Couldn't get a signal worth the crap to do it at Buckeye Game Fest.
The only downside of that is, in this modern world of the computers memorizing all your passwords and everything, if I try to go in and dial it on the phone, I'm not going to know what my password is for StreamYard. That's going to be an issue.
Well, so if you're using your own studio, it'll send a code to your email, but if you're just logging in to the link I sent you to join us for the broadcast, then you don't need the password. You just need the invite.
Well, there you go.
You guys would have recognized our buddy Aardwolf's voice there chiming in. So, Gary, how are we doing tonight?
We are splendid this evening.
And now that you've moved the chit show off of Tuesdays, you're not dashing from one show to the next.
I'm literally dashing the chit show from one day to the next. We're moving to Sundays starting on February 8th. Night, something like that.
Yeah. It'll be right after this episode drops, I think, or right before this episode drops, somewhere around there.
Tune in, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Woohoo!
And then the next slip will put you back to Tuesdays.
If I could go back to Tuesdays, that will be good, unrelated good news, and I'll leave that at that.
Yeah. And then the voice you haven't heard yet on this podcast, our buddy Bill is back to join us again. Bill, how are you this evening?
Life is good. I'm staring down my first semi-con of the year next week. Bunch of guys are getting together, renting a lake house, and gonna spend a long weekend knee-deep in historical war games.
Case Blue, right. Of course.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you setting up one big game to play the whole weekend, or are you going to try and do like 12 games in a weekend?
There's probably going to be three consecutive games going on, and it's going to be small. Stuff, right? Things you can get done in half a day. I don't know. The longest game I think I'm going to be playing is the U.S. Civil War.
Get that done in a day.
Oh, yeah, easily. Easily.
Yeah. Especially if people know what they're doing and you're not having to teach somebody. So,
yeah. I think we're going to play 2v2 to get a couple other people, up to speed on the game.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Well, you guys enjoy that. Have a good time. Mike will not be playing a damn thing because his whole place is getting torn up for some reno work right now.
No, I'm trying the tabletop simulator, but like I said, I can't because the computer's fighting me now.
Well, yeah, not much we can do to help that part. We have assembled this rather interesting crowd here this evening. We are going to be talking about quads, the SPI quads, but then other folks that have picked up those Quadra games over the years and also run with similar packaging. So we figured we needed four people if we're going to be talking about quads. That just sort of made sense. And I did want to, so I've got an article, I've got it on my side screen here from Fire and Movement number 9 about the Modern Battles 2 quad that was written by Phil Cosnett way back when. Those of you that don't know who Phil is, he's now retired, spent a bunch of years in the U.S. State Department as a foreign service officer and was the ambassador to two or three different places. And I think when he retired, he was the ambassador to Kosovo. One of y'all may know better than me, but I think that was his last posting. But one of the things that in his introduction, talking about SPI quads, supposed to be easy to play, easy to design, four separate games, each with their own map, 100 counters on the counter sheet is what they were set for. And then they had a shared set of standard rules that was only going to be one 11x17 paper folded in half, right? So 4 pages of the standard rules and up to 4 pages of the game specific rules for that one game. And that included the scenario information. But he opened up with, because Phil designed for SPI way back when, it is SPI policy to use the smaller game projects like the Quadra games to train young new designers to fill the ranks of the SPI research and design team. These quote simple games are usually easy for virgin designers to get a handle on, and the financial loss to SPI is less if one turns out to be a turkey. So that's how he led into this is what they're trying to do for the quads.
I like to think of the inevitable turkey in each quad as the broke broken wheel on the wagon.
Yes. And so what you had, as Gary noted, in pretty much every quad, there is at least one bad game.
There's almost always a standout and a stinker.
And the other thing that happened with quite a number of them is somewhere along the way in S&T, you ended up getting a fifth wheel published also, because there would be one additional game that used damn near the same rule system that could have been a fifth game in the box. And the example that I always bring out is for Mod Quad 2 was Berlin 85.
Which I didn't know until literally 2 weeks ago when you told me. Even though I've owned a game for decades.
Yeah. I learned about them at the counter-clipping show here just a couple days ago. Was that yesterday?
Yeah, educational. Yeah.
Stigler got me up to speed.
He knows his SPI quads, even though he hates them all, I believe.
Pretty much.
So as we're looking at the SPI quads, I mean, these, you know, again, four games in a box covered a lot of ground. My favorites, have talked about them a bunch. Modern Battles 1 and 2, and that won't surprise anybody given my penchant for, you know, post-Cold War or Cold War and later, ground combat being sort of my shtick. There were a large number of World War II ones published, as you would expect. A reasonably large number of both American Civil War and Napoleonic ones as well. But there were also some that were really off the beaten path. Gary, I thought maybe we could start with you talking a little bit about some of those non-Napoleonic World War II or Civil War ones, right? Let's get away from the standard stuff, because you've got the Crimean War Quad. You've got the 30 Years War Quad, probably a couple of
them. Well, the others I have are the more common ones, Napoleon's Last Battles and the Ardennes Quad.
Okay. So talk to us about those off-the-wall ones a little bit.
Well, 30 Years War, Jim Ozarski actually sold me on 30 Years War Quad, playing it on Tabletop Simulator. When he first started streaming, he was actually like doing Hex and Counter stuff. And the Tabletop Simulator implementations of those SPI Quad games, which are like a good fit for Tabletop Simulator, are really well done. They're really quite slick. That's the only reason I bought Tabletop Simulator.
Was to play quads, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. The Crimean War Quad, I mean, some of those battles are battles we've seen a lot of games on, and some of them aren't. Same thing applies to 30 Years War Quad. The Island War Quads, for example, is another one. Art of Siege is a quad. Like, almost none of those have had very many other games on their topics. So there's a lot of interesting ground covered, and the mod quads, which I have completely uninterested in, but which contain at least nine different battles that I also don't know anything about.
Yeah, we'll circle back around to the mod quads, because they're an interesting blend of things that actually happened and things that never happened. The only key is they all either did or didn't happen after World War II. We'll circle back around to those. When you look at the ones you've got, so Crimean War and 30 Years War, any particular game stand out to you as one of those, wow, this was a really cool game, or man, this was a real bomb?
I mean, the two that I've played are the well-known ones, Napoleon's Last Battles and Ardennes, right? I have not played. I just got Crimea at Last Origins, actually. I do have Blue and Gray, though. That's a relatively recent acquisition as well, but I've got the TSR version of that, but I doubt they changed it very much.
Well, Bill will be able to tell us.
Yeah, I don't think they have. It is pretty bog standard.
Well, some of the stuff that TSR redid, they redid the graphics for, but Napoleon's Last Battles, they didn't. And it looks like they didn't for Blue and Gray, too, either. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, and I don't know that they needed it necessarily, given...
Oh, no. In no circumstance. Well, so I think they redid the graphics when they needed to, like when the original of drawings weren't... Of course, you're talking about, like, drawings on paper, right? Yeah. There's no digital files to pass along or retrieve from an old hard drive or something. It's art. And if they don't have the art, well, I guess they're redoing it. Terrible Swift Sword is the obvious example, but they did a new map for Wellington's Victory as well. A lot of the other ones are straight out of SPI, though. Spies, the direct is same exact same graphics. Blue and Gray, Napoleon's Last Battles. Ardennes, I don't have and have never actually looked at the inside of it. So I'm not sure. But they redid the Ardennes Quad, too.
Okay. Mike, chime in here. Any particular experiences or favorites or anything you want to chime in on for the mod quads? Or not the mod quads, any of the quads?
I only own two of them. I own Napoleon's Last Battles, and Island War, which is a fairly recent acquisition. I haven't had it too long. And I played them both. I played the Guadalcanal scenario in Island War, and I played Napoleon's Last Battle. It was one of the ones I played on the channel early on when I first started, and it was Lenny, I think, and I really enjoyed it. That was great.
It's a classic.
In fact, I bought Napoleon's Last Gamble, I think it is, which is just isn't that a fancy redo of that, basically?
It's more different than people think it is, but it's basically that system with a moderate level of chrome applied to the top.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah. The list of people who are surprised that Mike has the Island War quad is zero. Mike having a collection of PTO games in one box. Totally unsurprising there.
Right, you got to have it, right?
The Island War quad is one that does not have a spectacularly high reputation, but it's one of the ones that I'm actually interested in seeing, and if we do what we're talking about doing, I'd be interested in trying it out.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to circle back around to that a little closer to the end of the show, where we're going to talk about what we're doing with all these quads and why we care. I was just looking back on BGG because I was checking on dates. I knew Island War was one of the early quads to get published. There was in 1975, there was Island War, Napoleon at War, Mod Quad 1, and there was one other one I thought was in 75. Hold on. Blue and Gray and Blue and Gray 2 were both 1975 also. So that was a handful of them all published in 75. That was a busy year for quads over at SPI, I guess.
I believe every year at SPI was pretty busy.
Yes, but for quads in particular. But then they all disappear. Like the last one, it looks like the last ones were 79. I don't see any going into 1980. It looks like
They were repackaging the older games, including the quads, as boxed games rather than selling them in the flats. And they had, of course, an enormous library at that point to do boxed versions of.
Yeah. And there were a number of games that were in different quads that were also sold in individual folios, because I have a handful of them in their folio form as well. Great Medieval Battles and Army Group South looks like were the two that were 1979. So those were some of the last ones to roll off the press there. So it was about a 4-year window in which SPI published a bunch of these, and you know, as Phil's article led off, this was training for some young designers, some new designers that were trying things out. You know, those famously unknown fly-by-night designers like Kevin Zucker.
I wonder if the thinking changed because they began late in their life to put series games directly in the magazines. I'm thinking specifically about the Central Front games, mm-hmm. and the Victory in the West games and a bunch of great campaigns, the American Civil War games. Well, yeah. A few anyway.
Next time we're talking to somebody who was around back then, we can ask them.
Well, you should have asked the question when we had Danny Parker on last week.
I wasn't in front of the computer when you had the show going. Why didn't ask?
That's
you
a good question. Well, we'll revisit that question at a later time.
Sure.
That might be a Dunnigan question, and I don't think we're going to get that answer.
No, but it could be a Herman question also.
That's true.
Do we know if there was any attempt to keep the rules for all these quads at that time kind of at the same level? I mean, I mentioned I own two of those quads, and between the two, Island War, the rules are much more light than what they are in Napoleon's Last Battles. So do we know if there was an attempt to maybe try to keep the rules lighter than any other game at that time? Or was it just, you know, hey, do a quad and give us what you got?
So the Ardennes quad and Napoleon's Last Battles are different from what was described before in that they are a quad done by a single designer. And not, here's some series rules. You go design games based on these series rules.
Well, that I get. But I mean, maybe behind the scenes, was there a, you know, do this quad, but don't turn it into an 80-page rule book. Keep it at, say, 8 to 10 pages and kind of follow the same attack rating, defense rating style of combat and that sort of thing. Because just looking at the two I have, they're not like I said, one's rules light, one's a little rules heavier, but the combat systems don't seem too different to me.
For the sake of clarity, I would like to emphasize now that none of these games are terribly complicated.
That's true too, yeah.
But Ardennes Quad, and it just occurred to me when you mentioned that, Mike, that the Ardennes Quad and Napoleon's Last Battles are probably the most complicated quads, at least of the ones I've seen, and there's a bunch that I haven't.
That's interesting, actually.
Yeah, I think that was intentional in part because you need a fairly light framework to graft multiple battles onto. And then also if...
Dean Essig does not agree with that statement.
But then, again, based on the concept fairly early on that they were looking at using this to help kind of train some new designers, you want to give them a lighter rule set that they can easily graft onto and run with. So, Bill, what do you think? Any particular thoughts on your experience with some of those quads?
The only one I have any experience with at all is blue and gray. And it is dead simple rule set. The complexity comes in all the battle specific rules that in which there really aren't that many in the grand scheme of things. But 13-year-old me sure struggled with that a little bit, right? Was, hey, remember what's going on in Chickamauga versus Antietam or Cemetery Hill?
Yeah. Well, that happens. Right. Gary, you're still on mute, dude. You're like talking to us without your mic on.
We'll fix it in post. Sorry, the chair is squeaky and I didn't want to subject you guys to that.
Fair enough. So I just pulled up because I was curious. I grabbed the Napoleon at War quad. So this was 75. So this is one of the first ones that they did. And I was just taking a look at who the designers were for that set. Now, Redmond Simonson is credited as the artist across all of them, as was the standard at SBI at the time. But you've got Marengo from David Isby. The Jena Auerstadt game was Tom Walchick. Vagram was Irad B. Hardy. Got to get the B in there so we don't confuse them with all the other Irad Hardys running around out there.
Well, his father was Irad B. Hardy as well.
And then Battle of Nations, which was the Leipzig game, was Edward Curran. So a whole bunch of nobodies that were starting out in 75 on.
Well, I recognize all those names. I don't know. They're not necessarily well-known designers today. Isby, maybe.
I mean, I clicked through a little earlier. They all have at least 10 credits. Now, granted, most of those are various aspects of the quad games, but three of those four also did blue and gray. So they shared
Ed
the work.
Curran was involved with Wellington's Victory, I think. Might be Frederick the Great, actually.
Frederick the Great.
But he was also one of the designers on the 100 Days Battle micro game from Avalon Hill, the little half-size box gamette. He was part of that crew. And then also worked on StarQuest, actually. So
StarQuest DSV? That was SeaQuest DSV.
There was a boxed game called StarQuest. Looking through Napoleon's Last Battles, though, when you take a look at the designers, Quattro Bras, Jay Nelson, Kevin Zucker. When you flip over to Ligny, where'd we go? Jay Nelson, Kevin Zucker. You can see where this is going, right? Wavra, Jay Nelson, Kevin Zucker. But yeah, I mean, that's so you've got a pretty heavy hand from Zucker in these. One thing that I did get a kick out of is that I think it was probably from the TSR reprints, but if you pull up the Napoleon's Last Battle quad from the listing in BGG, among the artists credited, Simonson, of course, Joe Youst, because Joe's done a ton of stuff. Larry Elmore is one of the artists credited for Napoleon's Last Battles.
Yeah, but that's from the TSR version.
It is. But it's still kind of cool to see Larry Elmore's name on a war game.
Well, I mean, Larry did a bunch of war game covers for TSR. I think he did the cover for Treble Swift Sword, too.
Yeah, but that's not what he's famous for,
well,
right?
No, but I mean, Larry's done a lot of different stuff, actually. One of the people I used to hang out in the EVE Online community with actually went to Larry Elmore's art school. So oh, wow. We got to learn a lot about Larry at the time and you know, occasionally see some, and this is well into the social media era, obviously. We got to see some art that you wouldn't necessarily expect from Elmore, let me put it that way. He did a lot of the art for Star Frontiers, too.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, he's known for his RPG art for TSR, primarily Dragonlance, but a lot of, you know, he did a crap ton of Dragon covers plus Snarf Quest. Plus, you know, a whole bunch of other just random RPG artwork over the years, here and there. And a bunch of
I particularly admire his Traveler work.
The solid black covers?
No, inside Traveler 4th Edition. There's plenty of Larry Elmore art.
Yeah, he's done a bunch of stuff over the years. He's done a bunch of interior artwork for things.
Those little black books had no art, Brent. There was literally no art anywhere in those original books.
I was being a smartass. Thought I'd try something new. So, look, the SPI kind of came up with this whole quad thing. Folks still remember them fondly, I think, because for a lot of us, they were some of the first war games that some of us, not like the first war game we played, but in some cases, for some of us, it's like the first war game that we grabbed and figured out on our own without somebody else showing us how to play. In other cases, they were just something that, you know, you got four games in one box. You got plenty of extra play out of those things. But there have been folks that have now taken this quad idea and rolled it forward, not just TSR reprinting SPI's quads, but we've now started to see a little bit of a comeback of the multiple games in one box sort of packaging. The one that instantly springs to mind for me is the one that I've done a bunch at conventions, and that's Brian Train's Brief Border Wars from Compass. And the graphic design for that was intentionally designed to look like the old sepia-toned SPI flats. I mean, it came in a box, but it was designed to look like one of the old SPI quads, and it plays absolutely nothing like them, right? But it does have the one common rule set for all four games, four sets of game-specific rules to include the scenario, separate counters for each. It really hits all of those sort of visual design and the tactile sensation of one of the old quad games. Gary, you've talked to Decision quite a bit about some of the quad stuff they're bringing back, or in some cases rebooting altogether. What can you tell us about some of the ones they've got in
route? Well, they have recently redone the Battles for the Ardennes quad, which is pretty much a straight reprint as far as I could tell. I'm scratching my head as to what else might be in the pipeline, though. I mean, they've more or less continuously kept Napoleon's Last Battles in print for 20 years or so. They have done Blue and Gray before, and there is a Blue and Gray deluxe with mounted maps and all that jazz coming out.
Battles in the East is not, they're not packaging those up as a quad. They're packaging them up as like two packs now, aren't they?
Right. So they're pretty deluxe presentation, right? So it's a two-sided map with two different battles in each Battles in the East game. There is very much a series rule book, and it's not even a game specific rule book. It's literally a card. That's all the game specific rules per battle, but there are only two. But it does occur to me, however, that many of the criteria you mentioned for describing what a quad is are also fulfilled by the original Great Battles of Alexander from Mark Herman and GMT. I'd have to check and see if there's actually separate counters for every battle. There might not be, but other than that, and the fact that it's all in one rule book,
we actually, you mentioned the Battles for the Ardennes deluxe edition that Decision just re-released. Aaron actually covered that for us with the Dragoons, and so we've got the link to that article attached to this podcast episode. But if you take a look at what's there, one of the things that he did was he pulled out the original game versus the new one and showed you the differences in the counters, differences in the maps, and the differences between the two of what the things look like. There's some that are dead ringers, and there's some that not so much, but counters largely larger and more legible.
God, I hope so. Our Dens quad counters were not SPI counters' finest moment.
So that's something that is out there. The rules obviously cleaned up and a little cleaner. You know, they've actually come into the 20th century for graphic design, at least, maybe a little beyond that. So there is some cleanup and such that has been done for that Battles of the Ardennes quad. So Battles in the East, to circle back to that one quickly, Gary, are those just straight re-implementations of previous games, or are they striking out onto new territory here?
So it is the system rules there are heavily inspired by the old Army Group South Quad, with some other sort of vintage ideas sprinkled in and a number of modernizing, streamlining things done to the game. They're very easy to play, but they are not like the same game system as any of the old quads. squads or any previous game.
Yeah, okay. Whereas the blue and gray, Napoleon's Last Battles, those are just keeping the old ones around, letting people still play the previous game.
Yes. Although I will, I guess, say I'm not crazy, and I realize that the current version of Napoleon's Last Battles from Decision is like 25 years old now. I don't really like the counters. The maps are fine. There's nothing wrong with the maps at all.
Yeah. Not a counter fan, though, for those.
Nah, I don't like the counters. I don't like their Wellington's Victory counters either. They tried to make them look like the SPI counters, and I don't think it works. I would have preferred modern counter designs in both cases.
Our 14th season of Mentioned in Dispatches is made possible by all of our Patreon supporters, but especially our regimental patrons who supported us at the top level. Regiment of Strategy Gaming would like to thank Stagger Wing, Paul LaFontaine, Matthew Rowe, Joseph Knoll, Fred and our favorite podcast dog, Kevin Bertram, Catastrophe Games, Patrick Garrity, Michael Sunborg, Chet Bell, and Andy J. Wargaming is our jam, and they help us spread it. You too can join the Armchair Dragoons as a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/armchairdragoons.
Mike, you mentioned you only recently picked up the Island War Quad in the last, in the last year or two. You've played these before, though, right? I mean, going back a while, you've played some of these with other folks, haven't you?
No, I have not.
Really?
I got into wargaming late. It's kind of, I've talked about this before. I started playing war games in 1979, right? Because of Starfleet Battles. So I kind of stuck with Starfleet Battles for I don't know how many years after that. So I didn't really get to go back and start looking at some of these older titles until much, much later. I mean, I'm sure, you know, when I was going in to buy my Starfleet Battle stuff, I was walking by racks of these games. I just had no interest in them, which is amazing because I've always loved history. So I don't know why I never made the leap to buying these things like the Quad. I don't, my friend was into history too. It's kind of weird. Why we never got into wargaming, I do not know.
You're weird, I guess.
That's a gift.
Well, I mean, I'd say you did if you were playing Starfleet Battles, right?
Yeah. My first experience with the Quad was Napoleon's Last Battles. That was my I enjoyed it. I thought it's, and having played modern war games up until then, I really enjoyed it. I think it holds up. There may be things that are better out there that maybe do those battles much better now, but it's still a fun game.
I think as games they hold up reasonably well. I think as there are better games on any one of those battles. I think is largely true for just about everyone for which there is actually another game. Because I don't know that there's that many games on the Russians trying to invade the Chinese city of Mukden in the 60s. So I think that may be a sample size of one. But I think as games, they largely hold up. I think if you're trying to get particularly detailed or really down into the weeds and the nuances of the battles, those aren't the right games to pick up for that anyway.
I can only really talk about Blue and Gray. It works as a game. As a historical study, man, not really, at least in my opinion. So,
well, Stigler would agree. But I mean, one of the reasons why that Quad has as many admirers now as it does is because it's a lot of those people are playing it out of nostalgia, but it's also real easy to play. You can play one of those battles in 2 hours. There's 4 pages of rules. There's like 2 pages of game specific rules. You could learn how to play it straight out of the box in half an hour.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can teach yourself how to play it out of the box in a half.
Yes.
An hour.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. You don't have to have somebody else show you. So, Bill, I know you've mentioned before, you've got the TSR reprint of Blue and Gray. Was that one that you had picked up back in your more youthful days, or was that a more recent acquisition?
No, that was one of my first games that I bought and wasn't introduced to me by my slightly older neighbor. I was into Dungeons and Dragons, so anything with TSR's logo on it was going to get extra attention for me. And so I grabbed it, forced my younger brother to play a little bit. But that was most of my time there. Right in the couple years after it came out is when I have most of my plays with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's a nostalgia piece for me. As my collection has grown and shrunk over the years, I've kept it purely out of that nostalgia. And I'm loving what we're doing here, coming up to really dip my toe back in and get some more enjoyment out of it.
Yeah, yeah. We're gonna pivot to that here in just a second. I did, Gary, when we talk about other companies doing quad style packages and presentations, you mentioned the GMT's Alexander game. The other one was on your broadcast 2 weeks ago as we're recording this, probably about three by the time people are hearing it. When you were doing your best of GMT 2010 to 2012, the Fading Glory set from GMT that re-implemented the Dash 20, the Napoleonic 20 games from Victory Point.
That's true. But we also, if we're opening these doors, we've also got, you know, any number of compilation titles from GMT, not just stuff that they're repackaging that they published years ago, but like all of the Musket and Pike games, right? I mean, then there might not be four battles in the box, but there's almost always at least three. Most of the GBOH games have more battles than that, to be honest. Men of Iron, same deal. GMT seems to be making this model work nowadays, even if they're not necessarily religiously committed to the number four.
But see, if you're not religiously committed to the number four, then how is it a quad?
Well, it might not be a quad, but it's certainly the same kind of idea, right?
Oh, yeah.
One of the nice things about the SPI quads, though, and the traditional quads you're talking about, is that you did get a separate counter set for every single game in the quad, right? Which is not the case with, say, Great Battles of History.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not sure that was the case for the Napoleonic 20 series either. I think there were some shared counters across there. One of the reasons why I've been such a fan of Brief Border Wars at the conventions, and I've mentioned this before, the only shared component across all of the games is the deck of cards, because you use the cards to trigger all your actions during the game. There's one deck of cards that you use the same deck for all four games, and then the game turn marker. That's the only thing that is shared between all of the games. So, you know, I've mentioned before, I asked Compass if they could send me an extra deck of cards so I could do two simultaneous games at conventions. And actually, Bill, I think you ended up in one of those 1 year.
Did, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So I've now got the ability to run two simultaneous Brief Border Wars games at conventions. And so that's, again, you know, we improvise a game turn marker for game number two. And it works out. But yeah, I think you've got a point there that there are some shared components in many of the GMT reprints. But the idea of, you know, one rule set, many games, I mean, look, ASL's, you know, been eating people's lunch like that for 35, 40 years at this point. It's not an uncommon thing. I mean, the OCS series rules, you know, I mean, how many OCS games are we up to at this point, Gary?
21, I think. I think they misnumbered Forgotten Battles. I think they put 20 on the box instead of 21. And it's definitely at least 21, maybe 22. I'd have to figure it out, but because they somehow didn't count the Philippines game either, Luzon
game. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was about and to say, they counted the magazine ones.
well, they counted the first one. They counted Sicily 2 as a numbered entry in the series.
Yeah. But that's another case of learn one set of rules, play a whole lot of games. It's just, it'll take you more than 20 minutes to learn them.
Do we feel like series war games are generally a bigger deal now than they were in, say, 1975 or 1985 or 1995? I feel like it, but I'm a series war gamer, so
yeah,
I'm maybe not the person to ask.
I'll have to think about it for a second. Mike, what do you think?
There were a lot of... I was going to say Starfleet Battles had a lot of add-ons to it. It was... But no, I think Gary's right. I think it's more of a deal now than it was back in the day. I think you see a lot more now.
Yeah, I'm looking at my game shelf, which isn't nearly as robust as Gary's. He could probably pivot in the chair and see a whole lot more options.
Games are all in the other room, actually.
Oh, well, maybe not then.
Except for ASL and the SPI quads on the top shelf.
I suspect somewhere in the mid to late 80s, some of that series stuff kind of fell apart, and not because people weren't necessarily fond of series games.
The whole hobby fell apart in that period.
Yeah, that's, I suspect it was more, you couldn't really plan for a series because you never knew if you were going to get to game number two. I mean, it's sort of, you know, you're focused on, let me do the best possible game for this specific battle, and you weren't worried about whether or not those same rules would apply to anything else somewhere else. And you know, it, at some point down the line, you started to see some serious things come back where, hey, these rules worked really well for this battle. If people are interested in this battle from a conflict, maybe they'd be interested in another battle from the conflict. Great Battles of the American Revolution, for instance. You know, I mean, those are all built off of a common rule set. And so what else we got there? Great battles of history, great campaigns, great battles, the American Civil War in both. I mean, I know it's two different publishers, but those are series rules. I think marketing those things is probably easier because people know what to expect and designing for them. I mean, again, your underlying rule set is already done. So
Bill Thomas loves series games for that reason. Well, they figure they have a gradually building audience as the series progresses.
And there are people that have to have every game in that series, right? So it's kind of a marketing thing too, where we're going to have 30 games in this series. And there's
why do you think I bought a game about the rebellion in Lower Canada that even Canadians don't know very much about?
Yeah, I mean, we're all guilty, right?
Very much so.
Gary's secretly a Fenian. That's all.
Know your customer, so there. That's good.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a bit of that whole collection completist thing. Look, Gary did it with his whole campaign for all the soapboxes from SPI. So it's not like he hasn't been a completist before.
Well, yeah, that I'm being slightly realistic about it, though. I have no particular desire to run down some of those soapboxes unless I stumble across like War in the East in the soapbox, for example, which is hard to find, or Wellington's Victory in the soapbox, or the conflicts in American history, or what's the other? Well, I think I said Wellington's Victory already, or the Star Force trilogy, which it's three games, but it's kind of a quad, right? Yeah. Because I have the two games in there that I liked already. And I don't need to go spend $500 buying a different box.
Yeah, yeah.
So if someone wanted to today say, I want to own all the SPI quad games, how easy of a time or how hard of a time would they have had finding these games in print?
In print? In print, not very many. But yeah. Like on the secondary market, you can get any of them for $150 or less, sometimes much less, depending on whether TSR redid them or Decision redid them, or if there's different SPI versions. In general, if you're willing to deal with the flat trays, you'll spend quite a bit less money.
So none of these have really disappeared then.
No. The flat trays are, you're not going to spend a ton on them. You'll have a hard time finding any of them unpunched. As long as you're looking for playing copies, you'll be okay. The flat trays you can find in large part because they're fairly beat up. I mean, those things are pretty tough to cleanly pack and stack very many places. The thing you're going to run into is that some of the more off-the-wall topics like 30 Years War, Crimean War, they weren't printed in great quantities, and they didn't get second and third and fourth printings the way Blue and Gray and Napoleon's Last Battles did.
Nobody's talking about redoing the North Africa quad.
Yeah, and there's not a whole lot of people talking about redoing the World War One quads either. So,
Great War in the, was there another one besides Great War in the East?
I think there were two of them. I just had it up on my screen and then I closed it a minute ago. So,
hey, I've had a long day, so
give me a second and I will go confirm. But yeah, I think there were two World War One quads. Please hold. But I think the BGG lists 20 of them total. Where'd we go? There was North Africa. There's Army Group South. There's Great War in the East. And I thought I saw another World War One one on here, but I may be hallucinating. I think I was hallucinating. That might have been the only one. So, but yeah, you're going to have a hard time finding the not Napoleonic Civil War and World War II ones, like the ones outside of that realm. You're going to have a hard time finding Art of Siege, for instance.
I can verify. Even the North Africa quad, though, is not an easy one to get. Particularly with the West Wall quad's another one. Not terribly easy to get a West Wall quad.
Yeah, but when they do pop up, they're not terribly expensive.
As long as you're willing to take them in the flat. Napoleon at War in a box is very, very hard to get.
Yeah, there's just not a lot of them out there is the problem, right? There weren't a ton of them printed. So you have a hard time tracking them down. But when they do come up, they tend to not be super expensive. You know, you're not paying $500 for these.
Generally. Yeah. So the Island War copy that I bought wasn't expensive. But again, the box was just, I tossed it because it was in such bad shape. Holes in it, the bottom had fallen off, and it was just I had to make a new box.
Was this a flat or a box?
It was a flat.
Okay.
It was a flat. I don't know that the flat
trays wear infamously poorly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know that Island War ever came in a box. I think it was only ever in a flat.
I think that might be true of the North Africa quad as well.
Yeah. I think Island War, North Africa, West Wall, the two mod quads, and I think one of the Napoleon ones never made it into a box. I think those were only ever in flats by TSR. I think the Napoleon ones made them into boxes later. I said TSR.
Well, Napoleon at War has never been redone, unless I'm forgetting about it, which is not impossible.
Yeah, I don't think that one ever made it out of a flat, did it?
There is a box version.
There is a box version.
Okay. There is a box version. It may only have been a UK thing. I'm not sure.
Okay. Yeah. All right, fair enough. I do know, like I said earlier, I do know several of the Modern Battles quads did make them into other formats, because I have the individual folio versions of several of them, of Würzburg and Mukden and one of the others. And then Bundeswehr, at least, was republished in a little half-size bag that was almost metagame size, except it didn't have the cool little plastic snap box. It was just a Ziploc bag, but it was like a little half-size Ziploc bag. It was the same size as the counter sheet, is basically how they formatted that thing. So there were several of them that got much smaller treatments or individualized treatments along the way. And I don't know how common those were. I don't know if that happened for anything other than the Modern Battles quad games, and I don't even think it happened for all the Modern Battles quads.
Which quad was Supercharge in North Africa?
I think so,
because I've seen that in a little folio as well.
Okay, so then it did happen to some of the others. I'm opening the North Africa one now. Supercharge was in that one. Before we turn our attention to the event piece of it, I'll start with Gary, but Mike, Bill, be mulling it over for yourselves. Is there something that was never done in a quad that you think would be an interesting quad, something that you would like to see in a quad style treatment, some collection of battles across a campaign or a solid conflict that you would think would make for a good quad treatment where somebody interested in doing one today?
Well, I mean, the folks are doing that, right? I prefer something like this to be kind of thematically complete in and of itself. So I would be in favor of, say, four battles from a specific campaign, for example.
Okay.
It would be a little harder to do that for certain topics than others. Napoleonics, it would be incredibly easy to do, as Kevin Zucker can attest, since he's done like 15 of them now.
Yeah, most of the OSG games are multiple battles in a single box from a single campaign. That's just how they package those up.
Yes, the current range anyway. Exception is the campaigns of Napoleon, which they recently, not probably 5 years old now, they redid Highway to the Kremlin, which is an operational game rather than a single battle.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, with just that exception of their current line.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting to see a Korean War quad. I think from the Korean War, you could probably pull together four discrete battles that would be easy enough to have a shared rule set while having independent counter sets and maps. And individual battle rules. You could probably build off of one of the rule sets that was already developed for either some of those earlier Modern Battles quads or one of the World War II quads. Because those rules aren't that crazy different. That you could probably grab something, you know, pick four battles from Korea and be able to run with those fairly easily. Similarly, I think there's probably some, you could do something with the Mexican-American War. One, there weren't all that many battles to choose from, but two, a couple of them were a little lopsided, so maybe that wouldn't be as much fun.
There's Gringo for that. I mean, that is an order of magnitude or two more complicated than your typical SPI quad, however.
Yes.
But there's multiple battles in the box, including some of the better known ones from the Mexican-American War.
Yeah. But looking back towards, you know, let's go back to that SPI theme of here's four pages of standard rules. Here's a max of four pages of game specific rules, plus the scenarios and 100 counters and go, you know, what would you come up with? So, Bill, what do you think? Is there something in particular out there you think might make for a good quad experience today?
Goodwood, I don't know. But, I mean, what, if you see the gap in what the SPI quads covered, there's really only one game, not even a full quad, that has any Ancients battles in them, right? So I don't know that it'd be the right treatment for the kind of rules I'm used to for these. But thematically, I think you could get some interest in that going. But yeah. Again, today there's other options for that.
Yeah.
We could, I suppose, count Prestogs as a quad with an extra game, since many of the quads got extra games one way or the other anyway, right? And in that sense, there's a couple of those that would fit into the Ancients, at least one that would fit into the Ancients category.
Yeah. Mike, what about you? Anything you can think of off the top of your head?
I mean, I think the general idea of take these smaller unknown battles and make them into quads. One of them's already been done, right? Rebel Fury has six games in the box, and that's exactly the kind of stuff I like to see. You're buying one box that has six battles in it. Let's see some more things. Like you said, the Korean War. Let's see a game that has four Pacific naval battles in it, or a box that has four War of 1812 battles in it, Battle of New Orleans and Washington and some other things. I think the subject matter is out there to put in the box. I think if people were interested in these games, that, you know, the designers and the publishers would have no problem putting these things out there. And I think Mark Herman's, hopefully this is, he's got two in this series now. Hopefully this will light that fire. We'll see more of these boxes come out. I think it's a good idea.
I don't think Mark's going to stop anytime soon.
And nor do we want him to.
Right. Well, even just with that series, right? Army of the Potomac's coming, and it's awesome. And Mark intends to do every significant Civil War battle using that system. And there's no game-specific rule books, but there's, like, minimal game-specific rules anyway. So for the individual battles.
Yeah, and he's putting the smaller battles, maybe not smaller, but the more unknown battles in those boxes, and that's really cool.
This has come up in conversation with Mark, is that one of the things I appreciate about what he's doing is right off the bat, he puts in battles like the Wilderness and Chancellorsville and stuff like that we really haven't seen that many games about. Yeah. Although the Wilderness is going to be a hot new topic soon, with No Turning Back and Stepping Into Hell both coming out probably this year or next.
Yeah. So it's just one of those weird circumstances where a whole bunch of things around the same topic happen to drop at the same time.
Yeah. Like Eilau, for example, where there's four games on Eilau got released in like the space of 12 months. I'm like, oh, what?
Yeah. And all of them had been on different development timelines too, you know?
Oh yeah, totally. The Lavatai Eilau is not out yet, but, or the new version, I should say. There is an older version, but the other ones are pretty much out.
So one of the reasons we're talking quad stuff for Buckeye Game Fest, we have the War Room and Gary's sort of the chaperone for that, as I'm not sure what the best way to phrase your relationship.
I am a party host, minor facilitator.
All right, sure. He facilitates minors.
Let's hope not. You go to jail for that kind of stuff.
You might want to rephrase your title there. But yeah, so one of the challenges Buckeye Game Fest has had over the years, and this is something that we've talked about, at least three of the four of us have talked about this before, is Buckeye Game Fest will get a ton of war games being played in the war room that nobody knows are happening because they never actually make it onto the official schedule at BGF. And so two things. One, we wanted to actually try and encourage people to get their war games entered into the official schedule at BGF. One, if you get enough of them in there as the GM, they're going to give you a free badge instead of having to pay the 30, 40, 50 bucks, whatever it is. But also that lets other war gamers who may not already have friends in the room find games to play instead of just showing up and going, well, hey, who's playing what? Flag me down. Let's do something. Because Bill, I think you've had, a handful of games that you've organized at BGF and not a one of them had ever made it onto the official schedule, has it?
Not the least. It's hooking up with people I know that are going to be there and privately arranging games, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and as Brant mentioned, I think that's a bad habit for war game conventions, depending on the degree to which they're publicly facing, right?
Yes.
I mean, we expect something like this from Winterfest, where it's like, every year, it's like somebody new will show up, but basically everybody knows each other. And within 2 years, the guy who just showed up will be, one of the gang, too. So, but generally, there isn't a schedule, right? There's people who privately arrange on the side to play whatever, and they show up and then there it goes. Whereas somebody coming in cold, you know, again, I don't think anybody's showing up at Cons Emerald Expo cold. Oh, what's this wargaming thing all about? Yeah, I'll sign up to play for a week. Sure, no problem. But a game with a significant public face, or convention, I should say, like BGF or Origins or something like that, it's really helpful to have events on a schedule.
Yeah.
I mean, even if somebody is familiar with and is in, you know, already interested in war games, because frankly, at BGF, no one's going to pay 30 extra bucks just for the heck of it, right? So there are people who are interested. But if you don't already know the people that are there, you're going to, it's just another barrier to getting more people there. And so I think it'll be a great idea to have some schedule pro.
Yeah. So to that end, in order to get more things actually on the schedule and get Mike to finally show up after 3 years of talking about coming to BGF, we are amongst us, we are organizing a quad fest, and we're sort of leaning a little heavier on the TSR SPI era ones, although we're, you know, happy to welcome other quads that folks may be interested in playing. But it looks like we're going to end up putting at least 6 events on the schedule that are all quads. And I think the way we're doing this is we're going to block off each event as a 3-hour block. We're going to put the quad in there as the event. And based on, you know, when the players show up, based on what they choose to play out of the 4 games in the box, that's the one we'll play. So we're going to put it on the event as the Island War quad. Mike will have that one on the schedule somewhere in there. And when the folks show up, Mike will say, all right, which one of these do you want to play? And we'll get out the one that they end up playing, and we will be the GMs and help facilitate them doing that, whether that means we jump in as an opponent for an odd number of people, or we just help teach rules or whatever. But we're going to try and get 6 different quads out there between Island War and the Modern Battles and Crimean War and Blue and Gray. We're going to try and cover as many bases as we can. With that as preamble, Gary, I'm assuming we're going to need BGF to like set aside a table for us for the Quad Fest.
Yeah.
So
that's not going to be a problem. There is no table shortage. It'll be fine.
but we can get some signage up that here be Quad Fest.
Absolutely. Know.
We can definitely
send me some graphics.
Yeah, I'll get
it. I really just want the Armchair Dragoons logo in a decent resolution with in a transparent PNG. Just send me that. That's all I need.
I think we can make that happen. So we're gonna quad fest this. Mike, what are your thoughts? What are your impressions? What are your reactions? What do you want the audience to know about quad fest at BGF?
Now, what is this BGF thing again you're talking about?
I reach through the computer and slap you.
what more can I say? You've hit it right. Show up and play, pick a quad and play. I've got Island War. I also have Napoleon's Last Battle, so choose one of those and I'll GM it for you.
Well, we got to pick one to put on the schedule, so unless you want to do 2, in which case we'll put them both on the schedule.
I vote for Island War, but you know, run what you want. You got to want to run it, so
you don't see it as much as Napoleon's Last Battles, right? So that would probably be the better one to do.
Yeah. And Bill, you are bringing along your Blue and Gray, right?
I'm bringing along the Blue and Gray. You know, bummed me out a little bit when I reopened the box and refreshed myself with it a couple of weeks ago. All the maps are on one sheet, right, back and front. So I was kind of hoping I'd be able to run 2 simultaneously like I did with the Battles of the American Revolution at the Fall Assembly. But it looks like we're going to be stuck to 1 at a time.
Well, that's an interesting. I think Island War, you could actually run them all at the same time.
Bill, I suspect if needed, we could scrounge up an extra map for you from one of the Blue and Gray games.
I thought about cutting it, but I'm like, I'm not doing that.
I'm just saying, I think there's folks about with copies of Blue and Gray that we can probably
get a second cut. Yeah, second map.
I would not hesitate to cut that in half if it all lines up. I would no problem.
That's cringe for me. I'll clip counters, but any other defacing,
highlighting of rule books, huh?
No. If a page of a book gets a crease, I'm not a happy camper.
Yeah. And then Gary, you are dragging along Crimean in 30 years. Is that
Crimean what more in 30 years war?
Yeah. And I'll have the 2 mod quads to 0 people's surprise. I will also bring along Brief Border Wars in case somebody wants to fiddle with a non SPI or SPI lineage quad. I will bring that one along and happy to, you know, let folks borrow it or just, you know, go ahead and be the GM and folks how to play as needed, but probably won't put that one on the schedule. But yeah, so part of this is, hey, folks who are fans of SPI quads, guess what? You get a chance to pull out a bunch of these and play and have a bit of a nostalgia trip. Folks who have never played these get a chance to come see a bit of a heritage game from, you know, kind of those earlier years of wargaming, when these things were very popular, and what was the shtick and how did it work. The 3-hour time slots we have, we're going to fit these games in 3 hours pretty easily. We didn't want to be rushing for a 2-hour time slot. So we figured if we block it off for 3, we'll finish probably a little early, and that's fine. Gives everybody a couple extra minutes to go grab some dinner. But we're going to run an early session, an afternoon session, and then an evening session with the different quads. So you'll have a chance to line them up where they fit best in your schedule. But watch the Dragoon site for some details. Gary will end up, I'm sure, publicizing it a bunch through his show as well. Sure. And Mike will probably mention it over on My Own Worst Enemy a bit here and there. So we're going to talk about it, you know, quite a bit on this. Gary, in terms of BGF dates, what are folks looking at for when they should be there? Never mind that we've got it all linked to the podcast.
So the War Room opens that Monday, and that is Monday, April 28th. So people will be in there, but the way it usually breaks down is it's 4 to 6 people in there on Monday, a couple more roll in on Tuesday, Wednesday, a whole bunch more people start to show up. So I would say that scheduled activity should probably be in the Wednesday to Saturday neighborhood, maybe with a Sunday morning, although I will not be there on Sunday morning. No. I'm
the last spending 2 years. I've been the only person in the room on Sunday morning.
Oh, there you go.
So other than a couple people packing up, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure I've ever even been to the event on Sunday.
Yeah, I think what we're looking at is we'll have a Wednesday evening session, probably a Thursday midday session, and then Friday, Saturday, we will hit it heavier with multiple sessions on each day for those 2 days for Quadfest. So you can ease into it a little bit earlier in the week if you happen to be there. But if you're there Friday, Saturday, and you want to play a different quad each day, we got you covered. We're going to have a couple of different sessions of those quads. And the nice thing about it is it's not just a 2-player session because you got multiple games in the box. So we can go up to 4 or even 6 players for some of these and be able to run them simultaneously, except for Bill and his funky map stuff. The rest of us can all put, you know, 3 games on the table simultaneously if that's what we choose to do and have an opportunity to cover quite a bit of ground here. There's a limited amount of theming you can do with, you know, the older games to really go way back into war game history and actually pull together something that has a consistent theme across a bunch of different games. This is one that we thought would be kind of cool to do. Covers a bunch of different games, but covers a bunch of different topics and eras of warfare. And then, you know, who knows, afterwards, maybe we sit down and compare notes about which games we thought were pretty cool and which ones were duds and turds. We're going to go once around the room for last thoughts and wrap all this up. And so, Mike, kick us off here. Final thoughts on quads as a whole, or SPI quads in particular, or the upcoming Quadfest?
Just like I said earlier, I would like to see more publishers do something like the quads again. So we buy a game and we get 4 of these games in one box. I think I like that idea.
Bill? What do you think?
Hey, I'm gonna throw it out and say, hey, it's a great nostalgia trip. If you want to remember what it was like gaming in the mid 70s to the mid 80s, and where these were some of the games you could find easily, come on out and let's get some of them played.
Gary, as the local party host for all of this, I do have a request that we have tab soda available on all of the tables during Quadfest.
Best of luck with that. You'll have trouble finding tab soda, which is nasty, by the way.
It's absolute crap. There's a reason you can't find it. It is awful.
They still make it. Somebody's still drinking it. They still really? Make it. But yeah.
That is shameful to think.
Nasty.
Oh, it's awful. But it was popular back in the 70s and 80s when the quads were. So that's the only reason I really brought that up. So closing thoughts on quads, Gary.
If you have never played a war game before, I don't know why you're listening to this show, but also the SBI quads are a fabulous entry point into wargaming. You want to see what the, you know, the old school hex encounter stuff is all about. Sit down in 2 hours, you'll learn how to play a complete game.
And not just play the complete game, but already know like 80% of what you'd need for the other three games in the box.
Oh, at least.
Yeah. Yeah. So that would, that'd cover a lot of ground for you as well. So, audience, thank you for joining us for this episode of Mention and Dispatches. Look, quads have been around for quite a while, and the form factor continues to still be used today. Again, the packaging is a nostalgia trip that appeals to those of us that remember the original quads, but the packaging isn't the be-all and end-all. It's sort of shared rule set, play a bunch of similar games, but also a shared rule set that is light enough and easy enough to pick up and just run with and get a good beer and pretzels afternoon game in that doesn't require you to give up your dining room table for, you know, an entire month of weekends or anything crazy, or longer for some of those ones that Gary and the guys have going where it takes over the attic for a year and a half. But we hope to see some of y'all come to Buckeye Game Fest, and that Quad Fest is the thing that kind of gets you to be interested and come and see the other things we have available at BGF. You know, assuming you've enjoyed this episode, if you didn't, why are you still here? But assuming you enjoyed this episode, we hope you come back and see us next time on another episode of Mention and Dispatches.
So long, everybody.